Our next speaker is Victor Vespremi. He is the group leader of the standard model and new physics research at the high energy physics department here at Wigner. He completed his PhD in 2007 at Purdue University about Higgs search at the Tevatron. He was a postdoc at Cornell and later on a fellow at CERN. And he's at CERN, he's at Wigner for practically 10 years. It's an important to know that he is a deputy project manager of the CMS tracker at the CMS experiment at CERN. So please, we're looking forward to the talk.
Thanks for the introduction. So I just realized that my presentation is going to be complementary to the previous one, but I'm going to use the concepts savagely that were introduced by the previous presenter without any attempt to define those concepts. This is not switching. Okay. So our group is at least a part of our group is very interested in searches for new physics. Now, in my simple interpretation, there are three ways basically to search for new physics: advancing specialized fields like UCD, B-physics, like what we saw in the previous presentation, performing direct searches for unknown particles, and investigate the behavior of actually known particles within the framework of the standard model. Now, direct searches can be done in a very simple way. You can look at the dimion invariant mass spectrum, and you can look for resonances there, or you can do it a little bit more in a complicated way by searches which are somewhat model guided. So, for example, in these diagrams, we assume that there are two or three supersymmetric particles which are available at the Tevatron at LHC energies, and so they are produced in the proton-proton collision. They decay as supersymmetric particles should decay into standard model particles, and we measure these. Now, of course, this is a model-dependent assumption, but if there is any other physics which produces this very generic final state, meaning essentially high PT tops and missing energy, we would also notice those, obviously. So this is actually the result that we published in 2019. The next publication is expected. So there, the amount of data was 40, roughly 40 in West Femtobarn. Now we have four times more data, and that's the time when normally you want to publish another update on inclusive searches, which we are going to do hopefully this year. And then the next time something like that is going to be interesting is going to be when you double the data or multiply the data. Okay, so how do we do this? In this plot, you can see that we have a certain selection with which we enhance the signal that we are looking at. Those are these bins. The black dots are what we see in data, and the blue columns are what we expect to see from standard model. If we see any difference between the expectations and the actual measurement, then there is new physics. Otherwise, there is no. Well, unfortunately, here we can rule out the existence of new physics. But of course, the whole procedure hinges on how well you can actually predict what you should see in the detector. And to illustrate that, I made this slide. So you can see the data flow here, two parallel flows actually. The top row shows that we have in the real world, okay, we have in the real world collisions in the LHC, proton-proton collisions. They are measured by the detectors. And then we have an online event selection system with which we can reduce the data. Then we analyze the data, and they end up in the spectrum like this. Those are the black dots. In parallel to that, we use Monte Carlo generators to simulate all the possible events that can take place in proton-proton interactions in the LHC. And then we have 3D models with which we can predict how our detector is going to react to these particles and how they are going to measure these particles. And then after taking into account the emulation of the trigger, we can actually predict what we should see in the detector. Now here you can see a pretty good agreement between the two. Within, let's say, 1%, or in the center, it's even better. This is simply the ZMass measured by 2 muons. And this is a kind of standard candle, because this is the kind of measurement that is easiest to do. And this is the first measurement that is done at 13.6 TeV just this year. But this is not the only measurement we do. We actually generate and measure the cross section, the production frequency of all the standard model particles that exist. So in this table, you see the standard model processes, and here you see in the x-axis the frequency of their occurrence. If we see any deviation from the expectation in these measurements, the theorists are already alerted, and of course that means new physics. Well, we pretty well understood. So looking at the plot, you can imagine why the standard model is thought to be one of the most tested theories ever. Actually, it's not really completely tested, because we haven't measured all the properties of the Higgs boson yet. This is the production frequency of the Higgs boson. And to interpret this plot, I don't know what's going on with this. So to interpret this plot, the x-axis is logarithmic, so you can see that out of the 10 times to the 16 proton-proton collisions we had so far at 13 TeV, in these production channels we have roughly 160,000 Higgs events, so not many. Of course, we cannot measure all the 160,000 Higgs events. Whether or not we can measure them depends on the branching fraction. So this table here shows the branching fraction of the Higgs boson, circled with the green, the production modes in which we actually discover the Higgs boson. When they, for example, the Higgs decays to two Zs and the Zs decay to muons, you can see this diagram here. You can see this peak. This is the peak that I showed two slides ago, essentially. And you can, well, this is the where we expect the Higgs signal to appear. And you see that it's the majority of the data comes from this light blue contribution, which is the other standard model background. Now, subtracting that, you can get a number of Higgs events in this data. So wherever I release the pointer, I always get this message there. I don't know what's going on with the, maybe it's running out of battery. So this is actually a very nice measurement. This is the cleanest measurement, as you can imagine. We are not always that lucky. And the left plot, you see the result after background subtraction when the Higgs decays to big quarks. Now, big quarks are particularly hard to measure. They are jets, basically, and we need to tag the jets which come from big quarks. The feature of these jets are that before they decay, they can move away from the primary interaction point by a certain amount. And if we have a good vertex detector, pixel detector, which we have in CMS, you can measure this distance and you can tag the jets as V jets. Now, despite of the fact that 57% of the Higgs decay to B quarks, that measurement is not as pretty as the other one. Now the C decay is even less pretty, because the C inherits essentially all the bad features from the ZZ decay and the B, if you will. They are measured similarly to the B, and similarly hard, if not harder. But the branching fraction is only 3%, so very, very small. So these plots show the measurement of the Higgs decaying to Cs, essentially. We can see two things in these plots. One is that the dominant background, you cannot see it, but I can tell you that yellow here is the dominant background there, which is Z plus heavy flavor jets. The same on the in the Atlas plot on the right in blue. I prefer the plot on the right from Atlas because you can, it's a linear scale, you can kind of guess that most of the events are Z plus heavy flavor. And actually the largest, one of the largest uncertainties in this measurement are coming from the cross section of the Z plus heavy flavor. So this is something we just recently started to measure. I mean, we, my group in CMS at Turnitin TV, as it turns out, even measuring this cross section is a challenge because we don't have this kind of measurement yet. Okay, the other feature that you can notice is that, so this is the standard model signal here multiplied by 300. Okay, so in the linear scale, if it was not multiplied by 300, you would not even see it. So do we have a chance to measure this at all? Well, we have a chance, but we need more data. We need more collision data. So in the current LHC, the only way to produce more data other than taking data for another decade or so is to increase the number of proton-proton interactions in a single bunch crossing. But that, of course, means many, many more particles in a single event. So this plot shows the number of PP interactions, which you call pile up, since the start of the LHC, essentially. So it starts with the red one back in 2010, when the average was around 10. Then at the time of the Higgs discovery, the average proton-proton interaction was roughly twice of that. And then at the end, in 2013, it's more than 50, so more than five times what we had in 2010. Now, in the left, you see the efficiency of the innermost detector, which is required to be able to do betagging as a function of luminosity. Obviously, that was seen right from the beginning that it would not be efficient enough. So around 2017, we installed a new detector, the phase one detector, and you see that the range in which it can operate was extended by a factor of 2.5. So it does matter a lot. Actually, in 2013, now we have to tell the LHC, please don't put more protons in the machine because we just simply cannot measure it anymore. So the good news and the bad news is that if I extend this x-axis, then the high luminosity LHC around 2029 or something like that will have an average pileup somewhere there. Okay, so it's obvious that we will have to have new detectors. So that would be constitute my proof why we need to have this this upgraded detector. So we call it a phase two upgrade, but in fact it's not even an upgrade. It's an entirely new detector using the latest technology that is available at this point. It's composed of the inner tracker here and the outer trackers here. You can see these are prototypes, actually existing prototypes with already prototypes modules integrated. So these detectors will be able to to stand this high rate, will be more radiation tolerant. There is going to be a larger acceptance to tracks at large data. And the pointing resolution is going to be better, so we will be able to tell tracks apart much higher efficiency. So the basic modules of the auto tracker are these two, what we call the 2S modules and the PS modules. They both have two silicon sensors separated by a few millimeters from each other. They are made with a traditional hybrid technology, so as opposed to what we just saw from Alice, that means that the sensor area here is separate from the electronics and the chips, which read out the hits and amplify them, discriminate them, and process the hits. In the 2S modules, we have microstrips on both sides, so they have a very good pointing resolution in one direction, but not so good in the other direction. These are the modules which are farther from the interaction point. In the PS modules, the inner part is a pixel detector essentially, and these are the ones which are going to be closer to the interaction. So this part which reads out essentially the strips here, which are wire bonded to the sensors, are called a front-end hybrid. Okay, so these modules are going to be able to generate trigger signals as well, and this is something which I wanted to point out. So the current trigger system is composed of essentially hardware trigger and the high-level trigger purely run on CPU. Now, before 2022, before the 2022 restart, they managed to essentially improve the level one trigger in such a way that we were able to combine some of the tracking information with the muon triggers at HLT, so the computing farm, and thereby reached an improvement in trigger efficiency by a factor of 2 to 4. Now, up here, you see this is a search, the result of a search for a dark photon. When the dark photon decays to 2 muons, in blue, you see the new measurement from this year, essentially. In red, the one that was taken with the data in 2018. And you see very similar performance, except that the blue measurement uses 1/3 of the data. So what matters is, yes, we need to have a lot of data, but we also have to be able to trigger on them very well. So this is the sketch of the CMS phase two trigger system. And with this new detector technology, essentially, we are able to extend the trigger latency, the time it is allowed for the trigger to make a decision, from the present 3.54 microseconds to 12.5 microseconds. So this new trigger is going to have full tracking, and it's going to reconstruct particles and even BTECs. So we are going to almost reconstruct everything at the trigger, at the hardware trigger level. So these are all implemented in FPGAs. Okay, so the level one trigger is going to, the very simple way it works is that we have the two sensors. If a particle traverses, it produces two hits. And if these two hits are compatible with the primary interaction point, then this is called a track segment stop. It's read out 40 million times a second by the backend. The backend runs the full track reconstruction and makes a decision to record the event at the rate of 560 kilohertz. Now, obviously, one has to test these modules in realistic conditions. So at Wigner, we built a test telescope called CROMI for the SPS beamline, and there is a small version of this purchased by the Strasbourg group. And we are planning to perform essentially high-rate tests with these this fall, hopefully. Okay, so getting back to the module production, so this is going to be a challenge. We have to build this detector in 3 years, essentially, and that means producing 13,000 modules in 3 years. Okay, so this is almost like I've never seen such a thing that has never been seen in high energy physics before. It's almost like a industry. Of course, the hybrids and the sensors are produced by outside companies, but the modules are going to be assembled by tracker member institutes. Before the assembly, there is going to take place a visual inspection, which is actually the most important part of the test. Functional test tells you that the detector or that element of the detector works now, but it doesn't tell you if it's going to work in 15 years. And remind you that the detector in CMS that we are taking data, the tracker today, has not been seen by human eye in the last 15 years. So it was put there, and we have been just using it. So we are going to share essentially this task with the CERN group. 1/3 of the hybrids are going to be tested in our facilities. It's mostly manual, but CERN is going to do it entirely manually. What we can add to it at Wigner is that we have a scanner which we can make very high 5-micron resolution images of all the hybrids that we are going to look at. And we are developing essentially a special image processing tool to make measurements which are not possible to make by human eye, essentially. And okay, this was my last slide. So So I hope I could quickly convince you that there are a lot of interesting measurements to perform in the next couple of decades at the CMS. This is going to be a real challenge from the detector point of view, and I just wanted to give you some glimpse how the module the data of construction is taking place in the tracker group, and what is our contribution to data trigger.
Thank you very much for the talk. We have time for a question, maybe. Oh, over there.
Please, short question to both speakers. You mentioned silicon pixelized detector. What is time resolution of these devices? In previous talk, I saw something like 20 picoseconds, but this seems to be too good. What is time resolution of the silicon pixelized detector?
We don't really measure time with the pixel detector itself. So in CMS, there is going to be a timing detector with the expected resolution about, I believe, 70 picoseconds or something like that. A very, very high resolution. The tracker itself reads out the event within the 25 nanosecond window. To some extent, it is possible to time the detector in 16 steps over 25 nanoseconds, so in 1. Whatever nanosecond steps, but the tracker is not going to measure timing information.
Would you like to add something to that?
Yeah, for the current LS pixel sensors, they're even slower. The emphasis was on being energy efficient, which is contrary to being fast. So that is like 5 microseconds is the shaping time. But then what I showed was R&D for a future sensor where we want to reach 20 picoseconds. But as you say, that is quite challenging. So we did some tests with LGUTs, which are now, I think, in the 30 picosecond range. And if you thin them down, it gets better than that. We're getting close to 20 for just the sensor, but then you need, of course, the electronics and so on. So it's still some R&D needed to make that happen.
It's a different concept. So they are interested in very high, very small pixel size, and not so much computing power behind the chip itself. And because that's allowed at low particle rate, we are designing for very high particle rate. So there is a lot of behind the sensor, it's all chip, essentially. So it's a different kind of approach.
Thank you very much for the talk. I'd like to ask the speaker again. Thank you, speaker, again. And we will have some small presents.